Joining us today on the Positive Chats podcast, Michael Austin from Christian History Magazine is back with us. Michael, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Tommy. Good morning, and that's great to be back.
It's great to have you back with us, and love talking with you, you know, Michael, and it's one of my favorite magazines, Christian History Magazine, and so it's always exciting when a new issue is out, and you have a new issue coming out about an important figure in the history of the church, Erasmus, which may not be a name everybody is familiar with. So tell us a little bit about who Erasmus is and why he's so significant in the history of the church.
Well, you make a very good point that not many Christians are familiar with him, and there's very good reason for that, but he had tremendous influence on the church and on the Reformation, a fascinating character. And over the years, particularly reading articles in the Christian History Magazine, lots of references to him, especially relative to Martin Luther's role in the Reformation and many others such as Zwingli, and so many other characters who, for one reason or another, were influenced by this person, Erasmus. And, of course, fascinating that he's another individual known by simply one name. So that should tell us something. This guy is a very famous individual, a very unique individual. And I was a little skeptical about him being the subject of a Christian History Magazine, but I've learned so much about our faith, the changes over the centuries, particularly leading up to the Reformation, the meaning of the Reformation, and also why it is that we are where we have come today. And what I mean by that is that Erasmus, I think, would be very comfortable in today's world. I think he would be outraged and highly offended and very resistant to many of the things that are going on. But after all, at the end of the day, Erasmus was what is called a Christian humanist. So those are two very interesting terms, and I'm afraid they are a bit of an oxymoron, meaning that they don't really go together. It's sort of like a large shrimp, if you know what I mean. So, however, there is this category, and I have learned so much reading the magazine, this issue, which is, by the way, number 145. And so we march on with another amazing issue of Christian History Magazine, and it's just a thrill and adventure to talk about him because of his great influence on the church, both medieval church leading up to the Reformation and today's church.
And you mentioned that he was an important figure, a founding figure of Christian humanism, and humanism coming out of the Renaissance in that period. You know, what is, just in a general nutshell, what is humanism?
Oh, good question. I would capsulize it by using a term that's familiar to those who study religion and faith, and I would say that humanism is man's best effort to understand and to excel with virtue. And I use that term, virtue, because we have to understand that humanism, and this is very interesting and something that just occurred to me this morning as I was preparing to speak with you, that a lot of these terms, philosophical terms that we use, quite freely, are very hard to understand without understanding the history of the Christian faith. We're talking about the time frame that we're talking about is the late 1400s, go moving into the early 1500s, leading up to what we call the Reformation and the publishing of the 95 Theses by Martin Luther. It's so interesting in this issue to learn again, things that led up to a monumental change in church history, and that, you know, typically one individual will be recognized and frankly kind of obsessed about when the change what caused, you know, what led up to a change is a very complicated subject. There's so many people involved with how the Reformation came about. And we have to remember that what the Reformation was about was the reforming of the Catholic Church. And Erasmus was being a humanist. Now, you ask, what is humanism? Humanism is not, I wouldn't categorize it as a religion. I would categorize it as a philosophy. And it's a philosophy that came out of the Christian worldview. We do not realize how thoroughly Christian thinking and worldview was at this time, as I say, late 1400s, early 1500s. The culture and the society was so thoroughly Christian that everyone's perspective came out of the Christian faith and a growing understanding of what the Bible is, because let's face it, the Bible was not in common use prior to the Reformation. One of the great contributions of the Reformation was that it popularized the Bible. It brought the Bible off of the pulpit, the Catholic pulpit, where it was in chains, literally, chained to the pulpit, not available to people, the common man, only available to the intellectuals and theologians of the time. And Erasmus, this is not commonly recognized, but he was a part of that theologian class. He was actually an Augustinian monk, as was Luther. Monasterium history, different group of Augustinians, but Augustinian nevertheless, and Catholic nevertheless, and ordained as a Catholic priest. So here we have a Catholic priest who is known as a Christian humanist. Very fascinating, and a world-class philosopher, world-class thinker, whose ideas and notions have come down to us today and have a lot to do with where we have wound up in 2022 with a lot of confusion, a lot of best efforts by men to be faithful and to be, I forget the term that I used earlier, but really to be godly, to be good people. I think today's church is struggling with the concept of being good versus being righteous, and that's a subject for another day. But he would be right in the thick of the conversation.
And he was a big one for learning. I mean, he routinely would denounce what he called the illiterate monks and stupid priests. He was not happy with the level of education of a lot of the hierarchy. And so he was a big one for learning, which is a big thing on humanism, is learning. A big move to the original languages, rediscovering Greek, Hebrew, rediscovering Those original transcripts, a lot of the ancient transcripts of, you know, Greek and Roman times were being, if not rediscovered, retranslated, reprinted. Now the printing press, so it's making these things available. People are reading them.
Yes.
And he believed that studying those things could help us better understand the Bible and better understand Christianity. His kind of thing is, he had that quote, what is learning if piety is missing, right? That we need to learn, but it needs to be connected to the Bible and connected to God. But at the same time, you know, he would probably also say, what is piety if learning is listening? He felt like those two kind of went together, that we needed to educate ourselves broadly, but always within a Christian framework.
Yes, yes. As usual, you have done your homework, and you have brought up some very, very important issues. Erasmus was, as I mentioned earlier, you know, he's relative to the development of many men, not the least of which would be Luther and Zwingli, principal leaders in the Reformation movement. And they were debating Erasmus. They were being influenced by Erasmus. They were bouncing off of him. They were arguing with him. They were being challenged by him. And this point that you bring up, which is very relevant, and all about Erasmus, who he was and his influence, he was thoroughly an intellect and thoroughly a writer. I would say principally, first and foremost, Erasmus was a writer. It nation recognition during his lifetime, and why he is remembered, just as Luther and others were great writers. We have, and they are important to us and remembered because of their writings. And he was highly educated. Of course, he began that education in the Augustinian monastery. He was only there for 5 years. And then he released himself. He actually appealed to the Pope because these monasterial traditions and schools were authorized, had been authorized by the Pope. He appealed to him to actually take on the persona of an intellectual scholar, and he got permission. So it's amazing the people that he knew, the relationships that he developed, and how that formed his career, making him perhaps one of the most recognized people of that era, very influential not only on the church, but on secular life. And that is why, actually, I refer to him as someone that would be thoroughly comfortable in today's world. After all, the institution that he probably was most influential in establishing, and that is what we call higher education, and the formation of all of these amazing universities, colleges and universities, that became what we know as the as the institution of education, came about because of his thinking and his writings and how he influenced educators of the day. And so it's interesting that institution has become secular. The Bible has been rejected by that institution, started by this man who would be outraged by that. As you say, what is he's famous for the quote, what is education without the knowledge of pietism, that is, religious holiness, a knowledge of the Christian faith. And so what is so fascinating about this issue and about him and about the Reformation is that you have this contrast between the church that talks about things like righteousness and holiness, and you have this other thing called humanism, which talks about goodness, ethics, the law, and those two competing worldviews. have resulted in what we know today as our Christian faith. And one of the things that I love about this magazine is that so often that's the subject, that's the underlying foundation of really everything that has taken place in Christian history. And as well, we could still say, secular humanist history in the world, of course, because that goes all the way back to folks like Plato, Socrates, the Greek and Roman intellectuals, of which he was a great student. Erasmus was a great student. And the folks in this time, this time of the Middle Ages, that where they were going into the Reformation period, they were eager for a Bible that they could read. They were eager for the classics that they could read, such as Plato, Socrates, Aristotle, and so forth, and a way to put these two worldviews together that made sense. Because after all, the culture was also not just influenced by the Christian faith, but also, of course, was the mainstream culture was influenced by the Greek and Roman classics.
And he was, you mentioned, I mean, obviously a great man of learning, but also I thought it was interesting, kind of a, I don't know if it's a paradox, but he also was concerned with allowing that to have impact on everyday people. One of his critiques of the old school theology was that it was so arcane and, you know, often getting off into these, you know, minute discussions about, like, you know, how many angels could fit on the head of a pin and all this kind of stuff. That it was completely divorced from the day-to-day lives of people, and he wanted to see that returned, not just in theology, but in the Bible. He composed, I was interested to read this, that he composed paraphrases of most of the books of the New Testament, which one of your writers said is kind of like Eugene Peterson's The Message, right? He wrote The Message
in
his day.
Isn't that interesting?
And because he wanted people to be able to read it and experience it, so he was concerned with taking all this learning, but also making it accessible to everyday people.
Well, you're putting your finger on a very interesting issue, because those paraphrases that he wrote were in Latin. And the only people that could read Latin, of course, were people in higher education and theologians. So he was, his audience was very definitely the, upper class intellectuals, highly educated people. But I do agree with you. I think he had a heart for the common man. And after all, the period of the Reformation was all about that. The common man, by the way, referred to as the peasants, they were in revolt. And, even Luther's famous for having contributed to putting down that revolt, not being a supporter of the common man's revolution, but wanting to keep them in a serfdom, a serf class. Various reasons for that, but they were times that were a changing, as Bob Dylan would say. So for sure, these individuals had a heart for what we would term being collegial, that is to transfer knowledge and learning to everyone, making that available for everyone. As a matter of fact, Erasmus is famous for his concept that although he left the monasterial life and left that cloistered life of the monastery, he now considered the whole world to be his monastery. In other words, he took his faith and his adherence to the Christian faith to his humanistic life, living as a world traveler, as a cosmopolitan, highly educated, very erudite, elitist type of individual. But he kept the attitude of the monk, of the Christian monk, and highly valued a lifestyle that included study, and particularly study of the Bible, of the scriptures, and contemplation. And so I think he's a he's the epitome of what we would like to think of ourselves being today and throughout modern history, that we would avail ourselves of the, and this brings us back to what is humanism. Humanism is interested in finding truth wherever it might lie, okay, wherever it might be. Now, the apostles, I think, and particularly John, would differ with that, because one of his great verses, one of his great admonitions is that if it's not of Jesus, it's of the devil. And so, to him, truth was only in a life of faith and an understanding of Christ, our Savior. Everything else was worldly. Everything else was the domain of Satan. But in the time of the Reformation, it was becoming popular, and Erasmus was kind of the poster boy of this movement, and that was to find the best efforts of man, and that would be in the highest learning of the pagan world, which would be Greek and Roman, and then other worldwide views, particularly the Eastern view of the Eastern religions, Hinduism, Buddhism, and Shinto, and so forth. Erasmus would be all about studying those things, gleaning truth from those things, but from a Christian and biblical point of view. So that's very important to remember about him. He was a worldly man, but he was his perspective was thoroughly Christian.
We're talking with Michael Austin from Christian History Magazine, their latest issues on Erasmus, but there's many others. Michael, we just got about a minute left, but real quick, tell folks about Christian History Magazine and how they can find out about it and maybe get a hold of it.
Well, go to the internet, search for ChristianHistoryMagazine.org, and that has this issue right on the first page that will come up. There's a reader, so you can actually read all of this magazine, turning the pages yourself, looking at the timeline, which is fascinating, what happened when in that day. I find that to be one of the most interesting of all of the issues, and for the reasons that we've been discussing. You can subscribe to receive the printed edition. I love the read the magazine in my hand, but lots of folks can enjoy it online. But those who support the ministry want people to know that you cannot actually purchase a subscription to this magazine. It's done only by donation. And if there's a financial issue, ignore the opportunities to donate. You can still subscribe at no cost to this magazine and receive a year's subscription to this wonderful magazine, and I commend it to everyone as a great read, very easy to read, very easy to relate. This is not highbrow theology. This is how the Christian faith interacts with our everyday life, and boy, this issue absolutely jumps right off the front pages of our newspapers and our electronic media in the relevancy of the Christian faith in our life, in our daily life today.
Hey, Michael, thank you so much for joining us. It's been great talking with you.
Great to be with you, Tommy. God bless you and your wonderful audience.